Marteau has the pleasure to be here. and thank you for this great conference, Luca and Céline. It's amazing. We're having a lot of fun. I should apologize in advance because I'm going to bring you to the marvelous world of 2D gravity. So for people who do real physics and care about higher D like you guys, I mean, it may upset you, but I mean, I'm hoping we will find a sweet spot and you know, converge to dimension independent conclusions, maybe things that we can you know, conclude for gravity. I will talk about flat space holography. And so, yeah, it's a project I've been working on with it's actually only postdocs. There's no senior in this group. There is Victor Godet, Arjun Kar, Lampros Lamprou, and Felipe Rosso. And yeah, the subject is to study flat space holography in low dimensions. So the holy grail in flat space holography is the S matrix. And this object was studied by Tuft in the 80s. And he showed that if you assume that QFT was valid near the horizon of the black hole, you end up with a weird conclusion, which is that the spectrum of the black hole is continuous, strictly continuous, even if you put the black hole in a box. And he was not happy with this conclusion. And he went back to the assumption and said, you know, we have to rethink this assumption. And we should, if we want to really gain access to a quantum mechanical description of the black hole, we will have to take into account quantum gravitational effect, and highly non-perturbative one. And these non-perturbative gravitational effects are going to be the subject of today's talk. So I think it's fair to say that the S matrix is pretty much understood in QFT, in some sense. I mean, for people like us, it seems to be pretty understood. So what happens when we turn on gravity? So G Newton is different from zero. We have back reaction, and matter can collapse from black hole. And we need to trade Minkowski for a notion of asymptotic flatness. And this concept was practically created by people like Bondy, Messner, and Sachs in the 60s. And they found a phase space that is basically made up of very intuitive quantities like the mass aspect, the angular momentum aspect, etc. But the quantization of this phase space is pretty much out of reach. So another approach to quantum gravity in flat space is the celestial holography program. So in a loose sense, it's basically trying to find a way to generate the S matrix from holographic degrees of freedom, from degrees of freedom that live in a lower dimension. So there are two ways to look at this duality. You can either start from a gravitational theory, compute the S matrix perturbatively, order by order, you add loops, and you can learn about the correlators of the dual theory. But there is another way to look at it. It's to find a celestial CFT that you will define as your quantum gravity theory, and hopefully, the correlators that you can compute in this theory will define your non-perturbative S matrix. And in this S matrix, you could scatter black holes and highly non-perturbative objects. So today, I will mix a bit of both of the approach. I will study a theory of flat space in two dimensions. I will first start from the bulk, and then I will propose a dual description in terms of a matrix model. So in this model, the phase space is much more simple than in four dimensions. But you have black holes, and you also have an infinite dimensional symmetry. You have a BMS2. The S matrix can be worked out. And since the model is so simple, you can compute things like, you can compute Euclidean observables non-perturbatively. And what I will propose is a sort of interpretation of these Euclidean observables in terms of Lorentzian quantity, such as asymptotic states. So we will show that the model is holographic dual to a matrix model. And thanks to this matrix model, we will compute a non-perturbative quantity, which is the spectrum of the Bondi Hamiltonian for this theory of gravity.
Sorry. You have to have the box. I can hear you.
What do you mean by the S matrix in 2D gravity? What are you going to scatter?
I will have to define it.
Okay.
It will be part of it. It will be the first section of the talk.
Okay. Thank you.
He was sleeping.
Don't do that to me. Yes. So and. Maybe I will have time to, oh yeah, and in this spectrum, we will find a signature of the black hole microstates. So the, yeah. And maybe I will have time to talk about non-perturbative asymptotic Hilbert spaces and maybe S matrix elements, but I don't know if I will have time to. Okay. So we all know that 2D gravity is topological. So in order to introduce dynamics in the system, we will couple the theory to a dilaton. So this dilaton has an interpretation in terms of a spherical reduction of higher dimensional gravity, where the dilaton measures the size of the transverse sphere. And the simplest dilaton gravity we can consider is flat JT, Jacob Tidalman gravity, where you include a cosmological constant, so capital lambda, which is a vacuum energy. This model is related to the pure gravity part of the CGHS model, for those who know, by a field redefinition. So it's a Vile rescaling. It's a dilaton Vile rescaling of the matrix. And here are the equations of motion. So the first one is that the matrix should be flat. Its curvature vanishes. And the second one is a sort of Einstein equation. Where the only gravitational mode is the dilaton. And it's sourced by this vacuum energy. And one can look for a black hole solution in this background, in this theory. A Euclidean black hole in 2D will be a disk where time has been identified and the coordinate length is beta, the temperature of the black hole. And you look for such a solution. You look for a dilaton profile that would fit this disk, and you find that the dilaton diverges like this. So beta times lambda as a coefficient in front of the diverging term.
What are you taking as a metric?
Sorry?
What is your metric you're taking?
It's a disk.
A flat disk. Okay.
But we also have to impose boundary conditions. So we have to fix the value of the field on the asymptotic boundary. And so we introduce a parameter that is a dimensionful parameter that tells you how the dilaton should diverge. So if we do that, we end up with a relation between the temperature, this parameter, and the vacuum energy. So at fixed boundary condition, the temperature of the black hole is fixed. There is no other saddle. And this is very different from what we would have in 4D. In 4D, we have the freedom, to change the mass of the Schwarzschild black hole and to change its temperature. So that's not something we want. So in order to reintroduce the freedom to choose the temperature, we have to make lambda dynamical. So we integrate in a gauge field to ensure that lambda. Sorry, we promote lambda to a field, and we integrate in a gauge field. So that its equation of motion fixes lambda to be a constant. And the action is this one. Here. So we still have the dilaton and the metric, but we have a new field, psi, and a gauge field, capital A. And the new equations of motion are this one. So we still have that the metric should be flat. We have the Einstein equation sourced by the field psi. But psi on shell is a constant. And its value will be capital lambda. It will be the vacuum energy. And the equation for the gauge field is that its curvature should be 1. Oh, and there is a topological, we have added a topological term that measures the Euler characteristic of the surface. And S naught should be thought of as 1 over the Newton constant. So here's the solution space that I've written in global coordinates. So the metric is Minkowski, and U are the usual retarded and advanced coordinates. The dilatant depends on two parameters, the value of the field psi, that is capital lambda, and there is another integration constant that I call phi h. So we have two parameters that parameterize completely the solution space for the moment. We have the vacuum energy lambda, and we have phi h. So here I've plotted the profile of the dilaton on the Penrose diagram of Minkowski. So it diverges negatively here and here, and it diverges positively here and here, and it's constant on these two diagonals. So now we should think about, we should remind ourselves, what was phi? Phi was supposed to be the size of the transverse sphere. So it means that here the sphere blows up, while here the sphere contracts. So we will interpret this place here as a singularity, while here we will interpret this place as an asymptotic boundary. So we find that the causality of the solution is the same as an internal black hole in higher dimension. We have two disjoint universes that are connected by an Einstein-Rosen bridge. And we have a left and a right boundary. And the temperature of the black hole is given by 1 over this vacuum energy. And phi h is nothing but the value of the dilaton at the horizon. Why is it like this? So let's try to build a phase space for this solution space. So we already have 2 degrees of freedom, lambda and phi h, but there are more degrees of freedom. Because if we really want to define the solution completely, we need to define a time for Scribe Plus. We need to define a coordinate patch to write the solution, and where the time will be the time of Scribe Plus. So this will introduce a notion of local degree of freedom. And in order to describe fully the solution, I will have to introduce a time here, but also a time on the other side. So let's start with the first time. The first time will have an origin. And this origin can be placed anywhere on this line. And in terms of the u coordinate, I will have a relation between the scribe plus time here and the global u time. And this will introduce a degree of freedom that is simply the origin. So that describes half of the solution. And the second half, it's exactly the same thing. But this time, I need to use the retarded time. So here is the relation between the global, retarded time and the local advanced time. And this introduces a new degree of freedom, also, which is the origin of this time. But we have a boost symmetry. And this symmetry is such that the only thing that is invariant under the symmetry is this combination of the origins. And I will call it ULR. There is another degree of freedom that emerges when you write the gauge field on these two patches. You will have this degree of freedom here, from which you can construct a Wilson line, and the object you will construct is will be called GLR, and it's a constant. After gauge fixing everything, you find that it's nothing but a constant. So now we have a 4D phase space. We have lambda, the vacuum energy, phi h, the horizon value of the dilaton, and these new local degrees of freedom that appear when you try to write the solution in coordinate patches where the time is the right time, you know, the time on scribe plus and scribe minus. So to make a phase space, we need a symplectic form, and there are two ways to get to this symplectic form. The first one is to do the usual covariant phase space formalism. But the second one is to use the fact that the theory can be rewritten in terms of binary gravitons. And you simply look for the binary action, and you write the symplectic form for this binary action. And what you obtain is the following. You find that the local degrees of freedom, ULR and GLR, are your positions. So the Wilson lines are the positions. And the symplectic partner of the gauge of the U1 Wilson line is the vacuum energy, while the symplectic partner of the gravitational Wilson line is this combination of lambda and phi h. I will call it energy.
The symplectic partner of the ULR is...
Yeah, the symplectic partner of ULR is a product of lambda and phi h.
Can you just clarify the Wilson line, where are you integrating?
From the left boundary to the right boundary.
So the left, yeah. Right quarters,
from,
or
from here?
Just to somewhere here. There to somewhere there. Okay.
It's a it's from sky minus left to sky minus left to sky plus right. It was important because I wanted to cover the entire solution, so I had to use the time on sky plus on the right and the time on sky minus on the left if I wanted to cover the entire solution.
Sorry, may I? Just a very naive one, but I haven't got it. So lambda and phi h are clearly, say, a parameter in the space of solutions.
Yeah.
But I suppose that the origin in somehow is related to how you to the solution for the dilaton, right? No, because in which sense the position of the origin is a degree of freedom. So is it because it is a parameter in the solution that I miss?
It depends. It's not a parameter. You can reabsorb this parameter by writing on the dilaton on the global coordinates. But if you want to define a time for your sky plus or your sky minus of these pieces of the boundary, you need to write it in a coordinate patch that includes this time. And when you do that, you introduce a freedom. This freedom is the origin of the time.
Maybe I'll ask later. Thanks.
So as I said, because I wanted to cover the entire solution, I had to choose this time and this time. But there is another possibility.
I have
it's
another question.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have a Bessel bucket structure with this phase space variables?
Sorry, repeat.
Do you have a good Poisson bracket structure with these phase space variables? Because your E is a product of lambda and phi h.
Yeah.
So can you define brackets with UR, LR?
So the bracket, to define the bracket between U and lambda, for example, you need to use the fact that the bracket between U and E is just one. And the fact that the bracket between G and lambda is one, as defined by this symplectic form. So when so there is a second way to parameterize the solution, and it's using these combinations of time. So again, I want to cover the entire solution. So on one side, I need to use the advanced time, and on the other one, I need to use the retarded time. When I do that, they will also introduce two parameters, but only one actually because of the symmetry, and another parameter that is this gauge field Wilson line. So you should think of these two ways of parameterizing the solution as the same thing as when you work in 4D and you have a future phase space and a past phase space. You have your bonded data in the future, and you have your bounded data in the past. And you can write a symplectic form for both of them. The only difference here is that I have two universes. So my degrees of freedom are parametrizing phase spaces that are attached to both past here and future here. It's a phase space for scry minus right union scry plus left. And I have another copy where I parameterize a phase space for scry plus right union scry minus left. And the S matrix is something that will map coordinates from one side, for not one side, but from in to out. So it will map from one of these space to the other, provided it preserves the volume of the phase space. So it has to be a symplectomorphism or a canonical transformation. So we know part of the S matrix, because as Andrea pointed out, we can clearly see that in the global patch, E and lambda that do not depend on which coordinate patch we write the solution. So we know that the S matrix must preserve E and lambda. But there is a freedom, not a freedom, but the S matrix will act on the other coordinates, which are the Wilson lines. So you need to tell me how to match the past cross future and future cross past Wilson lines. I can pause here if it's unclear. Yeah.
I'm afraid.
Good.
So, I mean, as you stressed, no, your Perros diagram looks very much the one of Schwarzschild in 4D.
Yeah.
So this means that on top of the usual S-scattering, S-matrix that we are used to in 4D, you may add this kind of structure if you would define Wilson lines from, say, one universe to the other. So it's a kind of an additional structure that you are introducing. And in 2D, you have only this one. But a priori, you could do something similar also in...
Yeah, these are my only gravitational degrees of freedom.
Okay,
they are extremely simple, but they are there. So I need to take them into account.
Okay, but so somehow it's not really related to the dilaton. You could really consider this kind of Wilson lines, say, even in Schwarzschild 4D or not, something. Or maybe there is the gauge field that plays a role. Well, okay, we can discuss later.
Yeah.
So it was, okay.
I think they would be the same in 4D, but yeah, we can talk about it. Yeah.
Since you have a lambda, you might have thought it was natural to have asymptotically ADS.
Sorry, can you repeat?
Because you have a lambda, you might have thought it was natural to have a diagram that was asymptotically ADS rather than...
Yeah, flat. So lambda does not affect the curvature, right? Because the action was phi times r.
Oh, so you chose the action so that the curvature was zero.
Oh, the action is a solution from a specific action where the equation of motion from phi is r equals zero. So it's a flat space geometry. Lambda is just it's a parameter. It's not a cosmological constant in the like what happens in JT gravity. Yeah. So the only thing that remains to be fixed is how the S matrix acts on these Wilson lines. And we can just start from principles. You know, we can just say that the S matrix, as I said, should be a canonical transformation. And we find that the most general canonical transformation we can find that preserves the momenta, so the momenta are E and lambda, but acts also on the position, is this one. So you find a function, you define a function k that depends on the momenta, and you find that the S matrix acts on the position by a shift by the derivative of k. So X are the position, so the Wilson lines, and P, the energy, and lambda. So this is the most general canonical transformation I can find that preserves the momenta. And quantum mechanically, this is simply telling us that the derivative with respect to p is shifted. So we find that the S matrix, when you write it in momentum basis, so momentum, these momentum are not particle momentum, right? They are just they're abstract momenta that describe the gravitational degrees of freedom. And when you write the S matrix in momentum basis, you find that it's nothing but a diagonal phase redefinition. So it acts on the momenta and it acts diagonally. So you can basically just reabsorb it in a redefinition of your momenta. So what we found is that the S matrix is trivial. This theory, if you don't include matter, is just a theory of eternal black holes. You start with the black hole and you end up with the same black hole, nothing has happened. There's nothing, you know, for the black hole to leak in or to scatter, there's just nothing. Yeah.
You're not including topology change, for example?
That will come later.
You have 5 minutes.
Oh, great. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the Euclidean signature and try to relate it to what I just said. So in the Euclidean case, we have two possible analytic continuation, the advanced time and the retarded time. This will give two disks, because this is the geometry that you get, and these are complex geometries. But these are inequivalent analytic continuations of the geometry. Okay, I just remind that a black hole is a disk in 2D. And what is the interpretation of the path integral on this disk? The first one is interpreted as the trace, as the thermal trace of the Hamiltonian that generates the time evolution that we have analytically continued. So it's the Bondi time, the future Bondi time. And the second one is the same thing for the past Bondi time. But there is another interpretation for this disk. And it's when we cut it in half. We can look at this path integral as the overlap between two states, that two Euclidean preparation of states. So if you will, sort of Hartle-Hawking states, where you sum over all gravitational modes on a half disk topology. And now the question is, how should we think about this state? Well, this state should be a state preparation, so we should look at how it glues itself to the Lorentzian part of the Penrose diagram. So the idea is that you prepare a state, you glue it to the Lorentzian section, which represents the time evolution of your state. And the only way to glue this half disk to the Penrose diagram is this way. You can ask me later why, but I promise this is the only way. And if you look at how it's glued on the horizon. And you see how it's attached to scribe plus right on one side and scribe minus left on the other side. So we recover this weird diagonal relation we had in the Lorentzian formalism. We had a phase space. We had phase spaces that were the union of future on one side and past on the other side. So this Hartle-Hawking state is a state in the Hilbert space associated to this phase space. And we have a second copy. So the simplicity of this model is pretty amazing, because we can compute this object, and we can compute it exactly. So the idea is to use the fact that all off-shell configurations belong to the coadjoint orbit of the Warp-Virasoro group, and you can compute the full path integral on the disk, where here I have the boundary action for this boundary gravitational mode that basically are group elements of Warp-Virasoro. And this action quantifies the breaking of the Warp-Virasoro symmetry to a subgroup, which is the central extension of the Poincaré, the 2D Poincaré algebra. So this group is really my asymptotic symmetry group. The the remaining one, the one that I have after the symmetry breaking. The result is the following. So it's not very illuminating. But if I write it in terms of density of state, we find that the density of state scale like exponential S naught, which was the entropy, should be thought of as the entropy of the black hole. And it's linear in the energy. But this thing, as I said, is non-perturbative in G Newton, because S naught is scaled like 1 over G. So this is proportional to exponential of 1 over G. So it's non-perturbative in G Newton. But it's not non-perturbative in the number of microstate of the black hole. So in order to gain access to this thing, we need to consider a highly non-perturbative effect. We call them doubly non-perturbative effects. There is also a contribution that comes from, okay, no, I'm not going to talk about that. So the question is, how do you get to these doubly non-perturbative effects? Well, you need to find something that will, in a limit, reproduce this gravity computation. And such an object is a matrix model. So the proposal is to replace this gravitational path integral by the expectation value of an operator in some ensemble, where the ensemble is an ensemble of matrices. So we choose this potential. So in order to find this potential, it's a fine-tuning problem, but there is an algorithm to find it. And the operator is indeed a thermal trace, which validates the interpretation of the path integral as a thermal trace of some operator. And the object that plays the role of the Bondi Hamiltonian in this matrix model is constructed out of the matrix. But it's not just the matrix. It's a tensor product of the matrix with another little object here that formally is the momentum of a non-relativistic particle. So, but you see, for the ensemble of this object is the same for each member of the ensemble. So it's a sort of universal piece of the Hamiltonian. So we then take a double scale limit where we send the support of the density of state to infinity, but at the same time we rescale the eigenvalues. And in this limit, we find that perturbatively in exponential S naught, the expectation value of the operator matches exactly what we found in gravity. Only this time, it will come with corrections. And these corrections are crucial. So let's look at the result for the density of state of the Bondi Hamiltonian. So here, I've plotted the linear part. That was the gravitational result. But around this gravitational part, we have a correction that comes from the matrix model. And if I subtract the linear part, what I found are these oscillations. And these oscillations have a frequency that is proportional to exponential minus S naught. And what is exponential minus S naught? It's 1 over the number of microstates. So one way to look at these oscillations is that they are a sort of blurred version of the microstate of the black hole. And this is in the spectrum of the Bondi Hamiltonian. And there is another copy of this for the past Bondi Hamiltonian. Okay, so let me conclude. So what we found is that this 2D model of gravity is just a theory of eternal black hole that live forever and you cannot do anything about it. But there is still a black hole, so you can look for its spectrum of microstate. And we find that in the canonical quantization of the theory, the S matrix was trivial. So in order to have a non-trivial S matrix, we need to include matter. We need to perturb the space-time. And this is work in progress. We have seen that one can define a Euclidean formulation of the bounded Hamiltonian. And we have also seen that the theory, the gravitational path integral, is holographically dual to a matrix model. In what sense? Well, we have rewritten the path integral that involves bulk degrees of freedom in terms of degrees of freedom which are matrices. Matrices are zero dimensional. So we've lost two dimensions along the way. And thanks to this duality with the matrix model, we have computed the non-perturbative spectrum of the bounded Hamiltonian, in which we have seen signature of the microstates of the black hole. And in, if you want to look in the paper, we also propose a way to non-perturbatively define asymptotic Hilbert spaces using the matrix model and also S matrix elements. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Charles. We are out of time, and to be fair to all the speakers, so I will cut the session here, but Charles is there, and the coffee break will be longer because we finish more. No, don't worry. I just felt that it was not fair because I cut other discussions, so, but I guess you will be happy to discuss more, so let's thank Charles now. And we reconvene at 4:15 for Cassia's talk.